02-3164, the United States against Scope. Fine, we'll just take a moment to collect this. We'll find him, I'm sure. Private attorney's room?
Yes, sir.
In the men's room as well? And his briefcase is right there.
See if he's in a briefcase.
There we go.
Here we go.
My apologies.
When I left, there was a room full of people. They cleared out fast.
The last case took about 3 minutes
of
the 20 that was allotted to us.
Mr. Ruth. Go ahead.
You probably know that my name is Robert Ruth. I represent the appellant, Julie Scow, in this matter. The case is about the obstructing enhancement, a guideline obstructing enhancement. District Court found obstructing based on its belief that Ms. Scow committed perjury in a pretrial hearing. At sentencing, Ms. Scow offered a diminished capacity defense to the obstructing enhancement. The question now on appeal is, did Ms. Scow establish that diminished capacity defense? And if she did the government rebut it? This, of course, well-established standard of review on the facts, the standard is clear error, and on the law, application of the guidelines is de novo. A couple of facts I think are essential to understanding these proceedings. First of all, the testimony that got Ms. Scow into trouble occurred on May 22nd. On May 29th, her attorney filed a motion asking that the court determine her competency. And in that motion, alleged that it didn't appear that Ms. Scow really knew what was going on or understood the proceedings. The court appointed an expert to evaluate her, and the expert came back on August 4th agreeing that, yes, Ms. Scow does not understand the proceedings. She's not competent. The court then made a finding, and she was referred to inpatient treatment. Now, what's important about that, and then she did 6 months in inpatient treatment in federal custody. What's important to understand about that is that up to that point in time, the fact that Ms. Scow had a serious mental condition was undisputed. It wasn't disputed by the government, it wasn't disputed by the defense, and the court accepted it without too many questions. So, and then 6 months of treatment. And that's important to keep in mind because that is long before there's any talk of diminished capacity. I think it's significant because it shows that this diminished capacity didn't just spring up on its own as a defense. It came from the fact that there were undisputed serious mental concerns for this particular defendant early on in the case. Then there was a supplemental report, and the supplemental report is really the heart of our defense. That supplemental report was submitted by Dr. Shattuck, a Bureau of Prisons psychologist. He was the treating psychologist for the 6 months she was an inpatient. And what Shattuck said is basically three things. He said, first, I've reviewed everything, and I can't tell you to a reasonable degree of professional certainty if she lacked the ability to tell the truth, or if she didn't lack the ability to tell the truth. But what I can tell you to a reasonable degree of professional certainty is that on May 22nd, 7 days before the motion to determine competency was filed, on that particular day, in that particular hearing, she had a diminished capacity to perceive and relate the truth. So, and that particular diminished capacity, he explains in some detail that it was tied in with her mental illness, it was tied in with her extreme depression, it was tied in with the pressure that she was under. But the bottom line is, Julie Scow, according to this particular expert, is not like any other defendant who comes forward to testify in a hearing. Where this is a woman who is saddled with the diminished capacity to perceive and relate the truth. So, against that, and I should further point out, James Shattuck is a Bureau of Prison psychologist. His reports throughout this case, even to the bitter end at sentencing, his integrity was never challenged, his competence was never challenged, and his qualifications were never challenged. What he had to say about competence and diminished capacity was taken at face value. So what the government then says, we brought forward that report and said, Judge, the government can't show that she has not shown that she knowingly and intentionally lied. She had a diminished capacity to tell the truth. And the government now has to come forward, this was our position, the government has to come forward to show that, no, she knew what she was doing. That diminished capacity didn't affect her at that particular moment in time. Now remember, the government's own expert, James Shattuck, couldn't say that. He couldn't say that at that particular moment in time, she wasn't affected by her diminished capacity. And the government says, well, no. The reason why the diminished capacity defense doesn't work in this case is because Ms. Scow did not prove that the diminished capacity caused her to lie. And I'll be the very first person to concede that. We didn't prove it. We're going off strictly what the government's own expert said. And he said, I can't tell you that to a reasonable degree of professional certainty. But we don't have to prove it. It's not our burden of proof. This is a criminal case. And even in the context of sentencing, in a criminal case, the defendant does not have the burden of proving anything. Once we establish the diminished capacity, then it shifts to the government. And I guess the best way to understand diminished capacity is we show with this expert testimony that Julie Scow is not like every
other. So there's a different burden of proof in diminished capacity and insanity.
Well, insanity, I guess the short answer is...
The short answer is yes, if you take your position correctly, because the defendant has the burden of proving by clear and convincing evidence if there's an issue of insanity raised.
Well, once we establish the diminished capacity, then the burden would shift to the government.
No.
And in an insanity case, once the defendant established...
By clear and convincing evidence.
Exactly. Once the defendant established insanity, it would shift to the government.
Yeah, but my question is the burden of proof, that is the burden of whatever it is, the defendant, of production, if we take your position correctly, what is the burden? Is it clear and convincing, or is it preponderance, or just the issue, just raise the issue and move on, or what?
Well, I would submit, Your Honor, in this case, I can't tell you specifically what the case law says, but that it doesn't matter.
Why?
Even if you'd said clear and convincing, because it was unrefuted. The government's expert said she has a diminished capacity.
Well, to say I can't tell you whether she's got the diminished, she can tell right from wrong, is not clear and convincing that she couldn't.
Okay.
It?
That's
why I'm concerned about whether or not the burden is different in diminished capacity and from insanity.
Here's the difference, though, Your Honor. I think that this is a situation of confusing diminished responsibility with diminished capacity. If diminished responsibility would say she can't tell right from wrong, it doesn't matter if she's guilty, she can't tell right from wrong, she can't be found guilty of this particular offense. In diminished capacity, we have to show by clear and convincing evidence. We have to show by clear and convincing evidence that she suffers from a diminished capacity at the relevant time. And once we show that she suffers from a diminished capacity, even if we can't show that the diminished capacity caused her to say these things, if she suffers from a diminished capacity at that moment in time, and we prove it, then it goes to the government. Then the government has to prove, no, look at what we've shown there. We've shown she's not like everybody else. We're not saying that we have proven that her diminished capacity, sanity caused this.
But if the burden were the same as that of insanity, you'd have to prove by clear and convincing evidence that your client was sane. And the government can just sit by and smile at you pleasantly if you fail in that and just say, they didn't prove it.
No, what we have to prove is that she suffered from a diminished capacity on to perceive and relate the truth.
How does that relate to the standard as it relates to insanity?
Well, in insanity, you have to establish that...
As a result of mental disease or defect, you are unable to appreciate the criminality of the act or perform or conduct to relate to that.
And once that is established...
Well, is lying under oath the criminal act?
The criminal act that is alleged would be lying under oath.
And so that would be a criminal act. And
yeah.
So the defense to that would be that by clear and convincing evidence that she couldn't lie under oath because she didn't know the difference between truth and falsehood. She could not distinguish between the two.
The defense is not that she couldn't distinguish between the two. The defense is she suffered from a diminished capacity. We can't say, the expert can't say if she understood, if she could tell the difference between right and wrong at that particular moment in time. He couldn't say.
What could he say?
He could say that she suffered from a diminished capacity
uh-huh.
to perceive and relate the truth.
Yeah. Is that proved by clear and convincing evidence that she
absolutely.
Could? Okay.
It's proved beyond a reasonable doubt. I would submit to you that the government right now, today, cannot come forward and say anything else. We'll see.
Watch.
Mr. Graven. May it please the court, counsel. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Dan Graber. I'm an assistant United States attorney, and I'm the individual who prosecuted the case at the trial level. Your Honors, you've hit on the issue with regards to insanity and diminished...
I stumble at it. I mean, even a pig runs into a trouble occasionally.
Yes.
Do you have a position of what the burden is when a defendant raises the issue of diminished capacity? As opposed to insanity.
Correct.
You're a different burden.
I carry the burden. This is a sentencing issue, and I'm trying to prove obstruction of justice, so I carry the ultimate burden of a preponderance.
So you have to prove, by preponderance of the evidence, that she was able to commit the perjury.
That she
and
made
she
a
did.
False statement under oath, that it was material, and that she acted willfully.
And that she knew what she was doing.
No.
Well, she didn't know what she was doing. That's the diminished capacity one.
No. Two separate things, and that's where the defense is getting confused.
Well, you got me confused, too. Come on, straighten me out.
Okay. There's insanity under 18 U.S.C. 17. That's clear and convincing evidence.
Right.
Then there is diminished capacity, which this circuit does recognize as a legal defense.
Yes.
The medical condition... If you find somebody's insane, then per se...
Well, insanity is not a medical term anyway. It's a legal term. If you ask a doctor if somebody's insane, the answer is, how the hell do I know? I'm a doctor, not a lawyer. But I want to know what quantum of proof is necessary and what the result of that is. If he raises the issue, do you have the burden?
I carry the ultimate burden, Your Honor. I don't know what his burden is when he raises it on a sentencing issue as a defense to willfulness. The cases that I researched don't talk about that in terms of what the defense burden is. There's not that many cases.
No, we're about to.
Pardon?
I say we're about to, aren't we?
Correct, Your Honor. And if you use insanity, then it's clear and convincing. That's the burden at the trial level for insanity.
Right.
But there's two different things that I want to... What the defense is saying is that insanity is like diminished capacity. It's like gold and silver. They're the same thing, and they're
well,
not.
No, he didn't take that burden on. He didn't say he had to prove by clear and convincing evidence. He said all he had to do was raise the issue, and then it's your problem. That's different.
Correct, and I can beat that even at the preponderance level, Your Honor. The record shows that I can overcome that diminished capacity.
He's not talking about your overcoming. He's talking about you having the burden of proof, not leveling the playing field, but you proving that she had the capacity to understand it when she lied, that she knew that when she lied, she was lying.
Correct. I had to prove that she acted within specific intent to lie.
Right.
And I was able to do that because I was able to show the conduct that she engaged in on 522 was not, remember, the opinion that the medical professional gave was that she suffers from major depression and she suffers from paranoid personality disorder, and that these two mental conditions diminish her capacity to perceive and relate the truth.
Right.
The medical professional did not say that those conditions caused her to lie.
No, but he said he couldn't tell whether she could lie or not.
Correct. What he said is, I cannot rule out other causes like voluntary intoxication and specific intent to lie. By him doing that, he undercut right. They have no medical opinion.
Yeah, but you had the burden. He didn't.
Correct. And I met the burden because the medical opinion that Shattuck gave was inconclusive.
That's right. That meant you met the burden?
Correct, because there was no opinion that Shattuck gave to establish the defense. What I'm saying is they never established the defense, Your Honor.
Well, then you're missing my point, because they don't have to establish anything once they raise the issue. You have the burden of establishing it. You just said so. And you say that you're relying on the fact that he couldn't say that she was able to tell the truth.
He wasn't
able to tell the truth. Is that what you said?
No, I misspoke.
Said that the professional couldn't say that she couldn't. She knew the difference of between telling the truth and not telling the truth.
What the medical professional said was that her major depression and that her personality disorder, her paranoid personality disorder, diminished her capacity to tell the truth.
Right.
But that he couldn't say that that's what caused her behavior on 522.
I know.
And see, that's where the government doesn't have to come back.
At that stage, you think you have no burden at all.
No, at that stage, the defense didn't even establish the defense, period, for me to even rebut and step forward and come back with it. That's our position. They never established it. All they said
she has a diminished capacity to tell the truth,
correct,
to distinguish it.
But did that cause
but he can't say that this is the absolute.
Absolutely. And
that's an interesting thing.
And if you look at the record, Your Honor, you won't see her gibbering. You won't see her.
No, he doesn't say she's mad as a March hare, she's drooling or anything. He doesn't say she can't tell the difference. She has a diminished capacity to tell the truth.
Correct. But that we cannot say that that's the reason why she acted the way she did.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the way she acted, if you look in the record, record 33, that transcript on that day, if you read that, you'll see there was no crying jags where she couldn't communicate. There was no statements by her saying
none of which are necessary to demonstrate an absence of an ability to distinguish between truth and falsehood. You can be lucid. Everybody can think you're exactly telling the truth, and you don't know the difference between truth and falsehood.
Now you're talking about insanity, though.
No, not insanity. Just the inability to distinguish between truth and falsehood. I haven't done anything completely for sure. I mean, I don't know which is which.
And I would counter, Your Honor, and that's why we did. That's why we.
Besides the way, if I've described insanity, I'm still trying to distinguish between diminished capacity and insanity in terms of its rational application to criminal law and particularly its sentencing.
As I said, I don't know what the burden is when you're establishing that defense at sentencing. The cases that I found didn't address that issue. They just addressed the issue of can you even bring up diminished capacity in the sentencing issue.
Can you?
Yes. Navarrete is a case where this circuit said, yes, you can bring it up, but it didn't get into the burdens. I carry, though, the ultimate burden as preponderance, and that's where I'm saying, in the end, the record of what she said on that day, Your Honor, shows that she did know the difference between right or wrong. She did know the difference between true and false. When I crossed her, she denied everything. She denied everything about using the drugs, about the consent issue. She came up with a story about how her nephew must have been using tinfoil with methamphetamine and she must have touched it, which we proved was a lie because the lab report from the sweat patch showed that,
it had met the
I don't doubt she lied at all. You don't have to demonstrate that to me. She lied.
But she did it because two big things. If she lies, she gets out of jail. And if she lies, she kicks the evidence out and the entire case goes down. And she was consistent in the approach. If you read it, you'll see she's consistent in staying in a consistent course and pattern. There's no zigzagging and contrary decisions and contrary statements on her part, something you'd expect for somebody that doesn't know, am I in a forest right now or am I in the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals?
Now that's insanity.
Or whether I'm telling you the truth as to whether I'm in a forest in the Circuit Court of Appeals. You'd expect some kind of inconsistent behavior, and that didn't exhibit itself at all on the record when she was testifying, both on direct and cross.
Is inconsistent behavior a manifestation of ability to tell the truth?
I would argue it would be, Your Honor, because how do you catch people in lies?
All different ways.
Well, but usually on cross-examination, when you're trying to catch somebody in a lie, you keep pounding them for the details, and at some point, the details don't mesh, and you've caught them in the lie because it's a lie, it's not reality, and they can't keep up all the details. And there's an inconsistency that happens. That's usually how you catch somebody in a lie, especially in the courtroom on cross. Never. You read that cross-examination.
The questioning of catching them in a lie and knowing whether they know they're telling a lie are two different things.
Correct. And that's where I'm saying the medical opinion that they obtained did not say that her major depression caused her to lie. Because if that's the case, Your Honor, then her position would be, well, don't blame me. It's not my fault. I feel depressed today. Now, that cannot be the legal defense. But according to them, the disorder, in fact, it would be, don't blame me. You can't blame me. It's not my fault because I'm majorly depressed. Because that's what she had, major depression. That cannot be the defense. It has to be more than that. There has to be that's the cause. And Shattuck said, I can't say that that's the cause. I can't rule out other causes. That's why we said they haven't even gotten out of the starting gates with their defense. I don't have to do anything more because Shattuck undercut them right from the beginning. And coupled with the fact that I've got her conduct on the record being so... my time's up, Your Honor.
No, that's Thank okay. You. I used up all your time.
It was enjoyable. Thank you.
I believe that you have expired. Your time has expired as well, Mr. Ruth. Well, in that case, we'll take the case under advisement. Thank you, Mr. Ruth. Thank you, Mr. Graber, for your presentations today. And the case will be taken under advisement. The court will rise until 9:30 tomorrow morning.